speaker for this evening, Allison E. from San Diego.
I'm Allison. I'm an alcoholic. You guys are rowdy. I'd like to thank Joe for asking me to speak. I appreciate it. It's always an honor and a privilege to be able to share my story in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. God, I felt so like I just wanted to tell you, if you were offended by all the God talk tonight, you're so welcome here. You know, I have 15 years sober, and I still bristle every time. And I have a relationship with God, but I don't want to hear about yours. You know? I'm just like so offended, you know? So welcome, if that's you. You belong here, too. So I'll just get into it. I was born needing a drink. I grew up. Life is really hard. And, you know, I was adopted into what I perceived for a long time to be a very normal family. I've gotten a little bit of clarity, but I was adopted into a lovely family, and I was raised very well. And I always felt so different. I felt apart from, and like everyone had gotten a rule book for life that I just did not get. And I attributed that to being adopted for a long time. And, you know, I feel a little off tonight, but we'll just roll with it, right? So, you know, by kindergarten, I was already incapable of showing up for life on life's terms. In my kindergarten, every student had a day. And when your day came around, the teacher would make a poster with your name on top, and they would go around to the rest of the class and ask them to say something nice about you, and she would record it and send you home with it at the end of the day. And when my day came, I tried to throw myself down the stairs because I figured if I broke a leg, I wouldn't have to go, and then nobody would have to do this dance where they could pretend like they had something nice to say about me. And I don't know about you, but that says that I need a drink to me. And I did not have that opportunity for quite a while, and it was insufferable, really. I started checking out emotionally. I started playing sick. That was a big one. I spent a lot of time in the nurse's office. You know, I was like convincing them I had some like rare tropical disease. I'm really just kind of allergic to mosquito bites. And, you know, and I started reading an awful lot, and I was really into musicals. I spent most of my elementary school like wandering around the playground alone singing Phantom of the Opera to myself. It was very tragic. I was part of the Andrew Lloyd Webber fan club, just so you know. Like, it was real. And I had a really hard time showing up for life on life's terms. Like, the people that went and sat in school and, like, did the homework, like, don't get that. I was one of those people that they talked about the, like, endless potential, right? You know, but living up to that, it's a whole nother deal. So, my parents were also quite protective, you know, whatever their history was, you know, that kind of caused that was legitimate, but they really ran a tight ship. And, my mother would drop me off 5 minutes before the bell rang and pick me up, you know, 5 minutes after the bell rang. And if I wasn't in that car, you know, there was hell to pay. Weekends were bingo with, or canasta with grandma. And I know how to knit and tat and crochet. I was really, really going to have a good time. And so I just hated myself, and I felt very different from my peers. And I was raised in a very well-to-do area, and I mean, these kids were like decked out, you know, and my parents are very conservative, and it just wasn't like that, you know. But something happened when I was in eighth grade and the stars lined up. My mother went on a weekend in Vegas, an extended weekend in Vegas with the girls, with, you know, her mother and her sisters and stuff. And my sister was in school. I had been moved already to a private school by this point, and we were on spring break, and my dad had to work. So my mother, fearing that my father like wouldn't cook or be able to feed me in any way, gave me $200 in cash. And left me alone, you know, and my dad went off to work, my sister went off to school, and I'm sitting at the house with $200, and I was like, what are we going to do? And I went to my old public school and saw everybody there that I hadn't seen in, you know, who knows how long. It was this grand, dramatic reunion, and somebody at some point said, we should celebrate. And I said, we should celebrate. What are we going to do? And someone said, let's drink. And I said, let's drink. And they ended up waiting and going to class, and I just hung out. I don't even know what I did. I remember it being an ungodly amount of time. But then school was over, and we went to the local liquor store, and the boys shoulder tapped and got us some booze, and they got me a 40 of Mickey's and a 40 of Old English 800. Let that sink in and just tingle through you, right? So good. And so we started drinking, and, you know, I think it was a Friday, I'm not really sure, and I stayed drunk that entire weekend. It was my first drunk, and I blacked out, which I did not understand what a blackout was until I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. It did not even occur to me that, like, losing time was a problem, you know? But I blacked out, and I had, like, brownouts where I was waking up in an alley playing in boxes, and then I'm in bed, and then, you know, like, so I stayed drunk and loaded the entire weekend. I smoked pot for the first time. I became a woman. And, you know, I had the damn time of my life. And all that stuff that was going on in my head, caring about what you're wearing and the money, you know, that you have, and just knowing that I am a lesser creature went away. And the freedom that I got to experience, you know, I don't even know how I pulled it off. You know, obviously my dad was pretty checked out, and he didn't care, because I was walking all around that town, and I felt like the kids in the movie Stand By Me. Some of you guys are too young for this movie, but if you remember it, like the kids on the tracks, you know, walking with their crew. I was like with my crew, you know, and we walked all around that town. We were jumping off of balconies into swimming pools, and like someone had an abandoned limo on their property. We were getting loaded in. It was like, yes, this is the life. And I just loved every minute of it. And I had told my sister everything, because I was very excited to share about my flowering with her. And I didn't know that she was in trouble with my parents, and she turned me in. She just gave them every piece of information. And all of a sudden, you know, mom's back. I'm 13 years old, you know, and they're staring at their 13-year-old. I look at 13-year-olds now, they look like babies to me, so I can't even imagine what my parents were going through, hearing, you know, what I had been up to that weekend. And it was the first time I saw that Al-Anon look, where it was just like the combination of disgust, fear, and unconditional love all rolled up into one. And I knew that sex was the problem, and I was just not going to do that again. And so, my parents totally. So, what was interesting about this story is, you know, this is my first drink, and I had the girls from that public school calling me at my house on Monday, and my parents are totally one to, like, listen in on the phone, and they're like, you know, you're a slut, stay away from my boyfriend, I don't ever want to see you again. And I never once drank with impunity. I paid for every drink I ever took, and it was worth it to the end. I ended up, they instituted a geographic for me. I was graduating from eighth grade. They're like, this is it. We got to get her out of Los Angeles, which I don't know. It's not really Palos Verdes Estates. It's not Los Angeles, but whatever. You know, we got to get out of California. We'll move back to New Jersey. We'll be with our families. We'll see the seasons. You know, this will be great. And so I sat in my room, and I will never forget this experience, which was reenacted later as well, where I wanted this opportunity. I wanted this geographic. And I reinvented myself in my head. I decided who I was going to be. I was going to get back into swimming, because I had been a swimmer. I was a competitive swimmer. They were starting to train me for the Olympics, and I decided to quit so I could smoke cigarettes and kiss boys. I was going to get back into swimming. I was going to get good grades in school. I was going to be the kind of girl that a boy would ask out on a date, you know? And I invented my future life. I was going to manifest it. And we moved to New Jersey, and we moved like the day after graduation, which is a terrible time, and I was very depressed. And I started actually legitimately like experiencing depression. And my mom was like, just go to the beach and, you know, meet somebody. I'm like, how do you envision this going, Mom? Like, walking out, like, hi, will you be my friend? I hate you, you know? And so she set up a play date for me, like, the utmost in, like, demoralization. So this girl, I'm like, I'm psyching myself up. I got my story. And I show up, and it's, like, the most beautiful girl you've ever seen up close. I don't know if she was wearing a cheerleading outfit, but she was in my head. It was just, like, she was perfect. She was on the field hockey team. She actually might have even been in her field hockey uniform, which is adorable. And she was just so clearly good. You know what I mean? Like, she was so clearly, like, great. And I was trying to, like, pull my hustle, you know? And within 5 minutes, I had an out-of-body experience where I saw myself, like, not be able to do it 1 second longer. I'd be like, so what's the deal? Do you, like, drink? Do you get it on? Do you have sex? Like, what do you do here? Like, come on. And, you know, I don't think I ever saw her again. But I was off and running. It's not true. I saw her, like, throughout the whole high school. She was on my four-step. I hate her. I'm friends with her mother on Facebook, and every time I still wince, like, there's still writing to be done, probably. But anywho, she, you know, I was off and running, was the point. And the book actually talks about this. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about having moral and philosophical convictions galore, and we couldn't live up to them even when we tried. I genuinely wanted to be a different person, and I made it about 5 minutes. You know, it was pathetic. And so I just, you know, I was off and running, and it was high school, and I was, you know, in every group just a little. You got to keep your hustle going, got to keep moving fast and fast, fast, fast. You know, and I was hurting. I started having, like, suicidal ideations. I'd like to tell you I had, like, legitimate suicide attempts, but my friend Chris always says, you know, I'm more the suicide where it's like tie a noose around your neck and go to sleep hoping it'll snag on something. You know, it's me. So, I did start taking, like, going through the cycle of, like, being depressed, getting suicidal, you know, going into a psych ward, which I love. I love psych wards. I just love them. They're like camp for the kids like me, you know? They're, like, literally to this moment, one of the best moments of my life was this guy getting carted off and put in a straitjacket, and as he was leaving, he was like, you're enticing. And I was just like, oh my God, I still, like, I'm blushing. Anywho, I would go to these psych wards, and it's great. You get to, like, go to group, and you get to go to therapy and talk about how your mother is the problem, and then at some point, inevitably, they push you back into the stream of life, like, that you're, like, your excuse for, like, not living life on life's terms is done. It's expired. You've ridden it as long as you can, and now you're back into high school, you know, like, with your feelings. It's terrible. I was drinking every opportunity I could. I was getting loaded every opportunity I could. I wasn't going to do, like, real drugs because, you know, that could go badly. But I didn't put it together until I was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. The drinking actually stopped working for me, like, by junior year of high school. And the way I wish that my story... I don't wish that my story wasn't so slutty, but whatever. My story is pretty slutty. So the way I found out that my drinking stopped working was I was as physically drunk as I could be without being, you know, passed out or blacked out. And I'm in the bathroom at a party with some dude, you know, doing God knows what, when I had a crush on that boy. I would have liked him to, like, actually, like me. But that's not what was going on, you know? And my head was telling me exactly what it thought about me. I was so physically drunk I could barely hold my head up, but it was just very clear, in what it thought about me. And that's what I learned in the rooms, is like the booze had already stopped working. The relief that I got that first drunk was already out the door. And I was in a pinch because I was hurting really bad. I was suffering from the disease of alcoholism, and my solution was not working anymore. I was very convinced that my mother was the problem. I tried the whole no sex thing for a while. I should mention that. For a while, I even became a born-again Christian. I was saved. I walked around in a shirt that said abstinence. I wouldn't wear earrings. You know, I had my Bible with me. Like, I'm a seeker, you know. I'm a spiritual, and I'm a seeker. Like, I know that I have a spiritual problem, and I've really looked for solutions under a lot of rocks. That was coming off of being Wiccan, by the way. So, I knew my mother was the problem, and I thought if I got back to California, I'd be okay. And so I decided that I wanted to come to school out here. I had been to a swim camp at USD, and based on nothing more than, well, I was going to say that based on nothing more than the decision that it was pretty, I decided to go to USD, but I also had an ulterior motive. I did the campus tour, and it's a Catholic school. I mean, it's not really run by the diocese anymore, but it's essentially like a Catholic school, which my parents really liked. So I thought that I could have the approval of my parents and join the gay club there, because I was kind of afraid. I thought that I was a lesbian. It turns out I am just a slut, but I... at the time, I was really afraid that I was truly a lesbian. And they had a campus club, and so I was going to be under the guise of being at this Catholic institution, and then I could really explore what was going to free me, you know? Anywho, so I got in to that school, and my parents decided that they were done with Jersey. They hated their family. Snow was terrible. Let's get out of here. Allison screwed up anyway. May as well follow her to San Diego. So they... bought a house in Del Mar, and we moved the day after graduation. I wasn't allowed to go to grad night, and it was just like history repeating. And I, unbeknownst to me, I did the exact same thing. And I sat in my room, and I reinvented myself, and I thought of exactly who and what I was going to be, and who and what I was going to be, and I was going to manifest it. And I don't even think I made it the 5 minutes this round. You know, I ended up sitting at the Del Mar Highlands, and all of a sudden, I was sitting up with some guys that were shooting up at the table there. And I was like, oh, my people, hello, who are you? And I love lesser companions. I just adore them. And I was kind of off and running, you know. And I had a pretty intense summer with that. And then I started school at USD. And I felt so terrible. I was overweight. I had acne and dandruff, and my parents like gave me $5. And like, I don't know if you guys have been to USD, but like, it's voted like most beautiful campus and like best looking people, and like there is a wealth. Like all my roommates had like $3,000 a month like spending allowances for them all, you know. And I'm just like, I feel terrible. And I met this little gay boy first night, and he was my drink for a year, you know. Like, we were just like, he was my barnacle, and we just did everything together. We drank together, we partied together, we did school together. And then he lost his scholarship and he was gone. And I was in more pain than I've ever been in my life. And I remember being on the phone with my cousin and complaining about my mom. And she's like, hey, sugar, you've been in college for a year. Your mom's nowhere around you. Maybe your mom's not the problem. And I was like, ouch. And I was getting more of an indication with that. I started seeing a psychologist. And I just want to tell you real quick, I have always been incredibly honest with psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors, because I genuinely want you to tell me what's wrong with me. I want it to be hard to pronounce, and I want it to be able to point to it when people like ask me to show up for life. Like, I can't. I have this diagnosis. You know, like, it's very clear. Like, what's wrong with you? I don't know. Do you? And it's just, I have never once felt like there was a sufficient answer, by the way, when somebody has told me what's wrong with me. But, you know, I had, you know, was trying, and I was doing that, and I had a pretty legitimate suicide attempt, and after Sean left, and I ended up getting involved with his ex-boyfriend and getting into the rave scene. And I was a raver, you know? And it was, everything that happened with my first drink happened all over again in that scene for me. And I actually got quite a bit of relief for, you know, 6 months maybe, which was a good run, you know? And I was going to these raves and I was, you know, into this, and I got involved in some non-AA approved substances, which were amazing, you know? My grades went up because there were 24 usable hours in every day, and my weight went down, and I learned how to shoplift, which was great, so I could keep up with the, you know, the Joneses, and life was good for a while, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, I was dating this boy, and he thought, like, the sun rose and set by me, and he was great, but he didn't like what I was doing. And so I was having to start hiding it more, and then I was actually trying to stop because I got that this was a problem, you know. And then he was really getting in my way. I want to back up and just always tell you, I almost always forget to tell the story, but it's just kind of how I drink. I had this girlfriend in high school who was so capable and normal. You know, she had a savings account and bought herself a car. You know, she always, like, worked and got good grades. You know, like, just like, how do you do that? She saved up money and she bought a ticket to come visit me in San Diego, you know, and I, she was staying with me at the dorm, and we were 19, and I said, hey, let's go to TJ. And so we went down to TJ drinking, and I left her there to go home with some Coast Guard, and who appeared on my doorstep as that Coast Guard, you know, don't even have a name to offer you. And she just, you know, bless her freaking heart, like, figured out how to get out of Mexico and get back to USD and to break into my dorm room to, like, be safe for the night, which was not on my list of cares at the moment. And that's who I am, drunk, you know. And just to let you know, I made amends to her and was a bridesmaid in her wedding, and she was a bridesmaid in mine. But that's a gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's what I look like, you know. That's how good I look drinking. So this boy, you know, was getting in my way, and I decided, basically to break up with him, but because I'm not honest, nor do I have courage, I just told him that we were on a break, and, you know, we'll get back together in a couple of weeks, like Valentine's Day, we'll get back together on Valentine's Day, and I proceeded to go on a tear now that he was, like, off my back, and I was on a pretty good run when, he decided to show up a day early, so not to show up on Valentine's Day, to show up the day before when we were going to get back together, to surprise me. And he walked into my dorm room at 8 a.m. with flowers and donuts as I'm walking in from the night before. I don't know what you look like when you're walking home at 8 a.m., but I look like what I was doing. And he, it was the Al-Anon look again, and he was just like, oh, you know, what are you doing? And I lost my hustle. In that moment, I had the moment of clarity that they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, where earlier that morning I had been prancing around in a bikini feeling really good, and in that moment I looked down and realized that I was emaciated. I was like 50 pounds less than I am now, you know? And I was a strange shade of grayish green, and I had been trying to stop. I hadn't slept. I know that, you know, you read medically, it's not physically possible, whatever. All I know is that I hadn't slept in a month, you know. I wasn't eating, and it was bad, and it showed. And he's like, what are you doing? And I just started, I broke down, and I was like, I'm going to stop. I'm going to go to rehab. I had no idea what that meant. Like, my whole experience with rehab was watching Empire Records, and she was going to go to rehab, you know, like, that was all I knew, was when you were messed up the way that I was messed up, you went to rehab. And so, and he's just kind of like looking at me like, yeah, right. And so he had to go home to do a car swap with his mom, and I got on the phone and I started calling that psychiatrist that I was seeing, and I told him everything. I got really honest with him, and And he's like, well, and I was having chest pain. He's like, you got to go to the hospital and get your heart checked out, and then we'll get you into rehab. And I had to call my parents. They were at a family reunion in Ohio when they get this call, I didn't call them, by the way, because, again, honesty, courage, no. I called my aunt so that she could call my mom. And then I got the call in my dorm room, and I knew it was my mother calling in. And I thought she was just going to tear into me. And I picked up the phone, and it was my mom and dad, and they were both on the phone, and they were crying. And they said, we love you. We'll do whatever we need to. We thought something was going on. We didn't know what it was. You know, we're getting on the plane first thing. And it pulled my covers, you know, like it just unmanned me to just have that love and support. And he came back, and I had told him everything I had been doing, and he was shocked. And so he drove me to the emergency room. And every time the doctors would leave the room, I was like railing lines off the heart monitor. Because you don't go into rehab with some left, you know. That would be silly, wasteful. And they ask you questions, you know, when you're in the emergency room like that. Like, do you think about killing yourself? Do you think about dying? And I'm pretty chatty at this point. So I'm like, well, of course I think about killing myself. I wish I could do it. I just never have the balls to really pull it off. Psych ward. So they put me in an ambulance, and they took me to Mesa Vista. Any other alums here? And it was my first time going to an adult psych ward, and I got scared. I got scared. And rightly so. They took me into the observation rooms. They did a strip search, and they put me in one of those little robes with no back, and they made me walk through the common area. And there were people there that were genuinely crazy, you know, and I felt very vulnerable. And then they took me to the observation room. You know, they strip you of everything. You don't even have shoelaces because you could, like, you know, hang yourself with them. So you're just barren. And as they were about to take me into the observation room, I heard my future roommate snoring loudly, and I freaked out. And it was like the full-on fighting, like four orderlies, you know, as I'm kicking and screaming. They throw me in the room. They shut the door. I'm blowing my nose on the sheets. They wouldn't give me any tissues. I don't know what that was about. My tongue split open in like four places from dehydration. I looked down. My legs were shredded from picking. Like, it was just like, I just, you know, the day before, I just felt like I was really, like, holding it together and doing really well. And in that moment, it was very clear to me that I had not been doing well, I was not doing well, and I had no capacity to make myself do well. Like, I was toast. And, but, you know, the ego has amazing recuperative powers. So the next day was Valentine's Day, and we got to make cookies and decorate cookies in the psych ward. And my parents came, and I asked my mom to bring me some cigarettes, and she hands me, you know, my cigarettes, and was like, I don't like that I'm doing this. I'm like, Mom, I'm quitting crack. Don't give me a hard time about it. She's like, you smoked crack? And, you know, and which I didn't really smoke. Well, I mean, I have smoked crack. But anyway, so they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked at them like they were crazy. Are those fireworks? Like, what the hell is that? Oh, it's Sky Show? That's cool. So they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. They took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 19 years old, and I thought they were absolutely crazy. I identified as a million other things, but certainly not just a garden variety alcoholic. And, you know, it's like, look, I have a problem with nose candy. I get it. But, like, you know, alcohol, I'm 19. I can count the number of times that I drank. And the people in there were so patient with me, far more patient than I've ever exhibited with any newcomer. And they just started to tell me their stories. And they started to talk to me about alcoholism and what that really looks like. They talked to me about the internal spiritual malady. They talked to me about those feelings that I had had my whole life of different, apart from, you know, not belonging, not feeling like I had the guidebook, you know, not being able to show up for life on life's terms. And they talked about Alcoholics Anonymous as a solution. And it was the first time, really, in my life that I had true hope. It was the first time I looked in someone's eyes and thought, you got it. Like, you got it. all these doctors, I desperately wanted a solution for years, but I never really thought that you understood until I started talking to the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were like, you know, try it for a year, you know, we'll refund your misery in full. And I'm like, okay, it's a spiritual program, right? They're like, yeah. And I'm like, so acid? And they're like, yes. If you know what? If you get a year of sobriety, you can totally do acid. And I was like, yes! Yeah, I felt like I had negotiated a deal. You know, it was spiritual trickery, really. But they got me, man. They got me. And so they're like, just show up and just try this for a year. Like, is it worth it for you to try everything in here just for a while? And if it doesn't work, you know, if it means you never have to be in this position ever again, it's like, of course, of course. And so I'm a good little starter, and I went to the McDonald's Center and got my $50,000 big book and did the program there. And I decided that I was going to be the most supreme AA you've ever seen. I was going to join an Alano club. I was going to work the steps faster than anybody's ever worked the steps. And, you know, I was going to have a sponsor. I was going to go to 90 and 90. Like, I was going to do this. Good little starter. But, God, you know, 28 days without your boyfriend is so long. And so when I got out of rehab, I had to spend time with him. And I had pulled out of a semester at school, and I felt really bad about that. So I needed to get enrolled in community college, you know, at least to kind of get back in there. And, you know, gosh, I should probably get a job. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, 90 days had gone by, and I think I had been to like 30 meetings, you know, or something ridiculous. I was cheating on my boyfriend in the parking lots of the meetings that I did go to, and I was shoplifting still, and I was doing, you know, everything I was doing loaded, I was trying to do sober and bearing the full emotional repercussions of. And I hit bottom at 90 days of sobriety as truly as I did the day that I went into rehab. And at that point, thank God I had been exposed to some really good people and good program. And I went to this guy, and I was like, I need a sponsor that's going to kick my butt. And he's like, well, I happen to know that my girlfriend is incredibly capable of that. You know, ask her. And she had a bit of a reputation. And so I asked her to sponsor me, and she's pretty serious. Well, she was much more serious at the time. And she said, are you willing to do everything I ask as long as it's not illegal, immoral, or indecent? And I'm like, oh, she's serious. Okay. Yes. And she's like, all right, so here's the deal. If you want me to sponsor you, you have to go to 7 meetings a week. You have to have commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous at 4 meetings a week. You need to show up at my house every Sunday at 9 a.m., which was an ungodly time, and do written 10 steps with your sobriety sisters and read out of the book with me. And I felt like she had like taken this scroll out and was like, sign here, you know? And I was like, all right, you know, yes, what do you want? Like, I'm done. I'm toast. And I did everything she asked. She told me when she gave me my year cake that she thought I would make it about a week. And I don't know what grace, you know, I had to have the desperation that I did, but I am incredibly grateful. I've had the experience of like quitting smoking in sobriety and then having a cigarette. And so I quit in like 2002. I got sober in 2000. I quit in 2002. I think I ended up having a cigarette in like 2006. I've wanted one every day since, you know? So I have a clear picture of how grateful I am that I haven't drank. So I became like a damn good little AA. I was like your 2-year wonder, you know, total like service. I was on whatever your gifts or strengths or interests are, there's a place for you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a nerd, so my place is on the business committees. I was so stoked. I got to be, I finished my degree in accounting and sat for the CPA exam and passed that. And as I was sitting as the chair of the business committee for San Diego Central Office, and they were presenting the financial statements to me, it was like nerddom. Like, it was the best ever. I loved being sober. And everything was great. I met a man in AA, and We became engaged. We picked out our house because we thought it would be a wonderful place for AA parties. And, you know, we got married, and that's when really my life started to unravel. So I proceeded to have a few rough years. You know, I started losing babies. I started having trouble getting pregnant and staying pregnant, and I lost 3 pregnancies. And it was the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous that I had a problem that I couldn't do a 10th step and be okay. And that was a really tough experience because I was firmly raised in that any problem you have, the solution is in that book. And I think that that's true because the solution says in the book, like, you can seek outside help. And I was a hurting little pup, man. And my sponsor, I ended up changing sponsors around that time and going with a woman that had, you know, some experience that was more on par with the things I was going through. And she was really clear to me that, like, I couldn't necessarily take my spiritual temperature when I was experiencing, number one, the grief and the hormone swings. You know, losing 3 pregnancies right in a row and, like, being on fertility drugs, screw it. There's no amount of prayer that can, like, keep you tuned in, like, rush hour traffic. You're done. And I had to walk through insane grief in sobriety and just continue to show up. And then I got pregnant with twins. My other speaker has a parent of twins. I have 6-year-old twins now, and my happy little accident, my 4-year-old. Accident, not a mistake, accident. And so I got pregnant with twins, and I went from being, like, in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous to being at home with 2 infant children. And my sponsor was very, very clear with me. She's like, you know, it's time to, like, pay some attention to those babies. And I made it to 2 meetings a week for a long time. I had a mommy meeting at my house, but I have never experienced such disconnection. Thank God for Facebook. Like, literally, it was like, are you out there, people? You know, I'm home with infant twins. And it was crazy. My son was a rough ride, you know. It was 6 years before I slept through the night. It turns out my son is on the spectrum, and, you know, but we didn't know that for a long time, and it was just really, really tough. And so no sleep, barely hitting meetings, just trying to hold it together, working full time. It was a long period of pain, really, and that, amongst other things, you know, killed the marriage. And so I got a divorce, and, you know, we work together, and we go to meetings together, and we co-parent together. And thank God that we both have a program in Alcoholics Anonymous that allows us to do so. And, I have recommitted to the program in the last few years in a very different way. I have a relationship with my sponsor. I still go to my home group, and I try to pick up, you know, more meetings than that. And I have real relationships with people in sobriety. And I have a relationship with a God of my own understanding, and I still don't want to hear about yours. And these last couple years have been really interesting, you know, dialing in my son's diagnosis and being single for a whopping 2 months. That's like my max. And then I met the love of my life, and we started this journey together, and then he dropped dead in a coffee house. And it was very dramatic, Charles. So he had a cardiac arrest, and he was dead for like 12 minutes before they got him back, like on the 5th paddle. And I was in the ER with him and walked through a lot of that with him, and that was pretty rough. And, you know, it's happened twice since, and he's pretty stable right now. But it's just like, you know, the hits keep on coming in some regards, and it's never been better. My life has never been better in most. Like, I have a really beautiful life, and I have been able to walk through very adult emotions. And thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I am 100% incapable for showing up on life on life's terms. And yet, I'm a grown-up. Like, I'm 15 years sober. I got sober, I was 19. I feel like I kind of froze in time. I still feel like a 19-year-old in my head at sometimes. But it's like, nonetheless, like, I'm a grown-up woman who's, you know, has a business and has, you know, relationships and children that I'm taking care of. And I promise you, that would not be possible without, you know, making Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the center of my life. And I'm so grateful for the women in my life and my girlfriend, Kate, who's here tonight. They talk about a fellowship will spring up amongst you. It took 5 years to really get my crew of girls that I have now. I would have a girlfriend, and then she would drink. And then I'd have another girlfriend, and then she would drink. And it wasn't until I was 5 years sober that a group of us, you know, really became friends, but they are my glue. They hold my kite string, you know? And thanks so much for letting me share.